I've been forced to start the evening prematurely.
I thought you were ready.
By our 5-word champion, Grace Gatton.
You can do it. Thank you. I'm proud of you. I wanted to hear somebody say my name here because in the States we're usually Megan. In that horrible Megan. But it is McGann, that's my last name. And this piece is dedicated to my mother. I left for Ireland on June 15th because it's a really hard time for me. It's the day that my mother was born and was married. And she has been deceased since 2005. So it's a hard time, and I just decided that was a great time to strike out. Chest deep in gray water. Did you know that the runoff from melting glaciers is gray? I saw it in the Yukon. My favorite thing to do in the tub is to play with the warped reflection of my figure in the shower head, use my hand to discern what each funny line represents. I touched my earlobe yesterday and it was gone. The same sterling silver with an aquamarine stone that's dangled there for 25 days. When I first shook it loose from a heart-shaped tin and held it up to catch the light, there was a tiny bit of skin, perhaps the last unincinerated bit of my mother on this planet. And I know that's gross, but when it's all you have after 33 years of knowing, then you tend to hang on to it. And hanging I did on my ear for all those days, imagining the little flare of blue complemented absolutely everything I put on this body. So on the 25th day, like a glacier in this unseasonably warm millennium, I experienced meltdown. Imagine my tears were gray as I crouched naked on the hardwood holding my knees, because that's what you do when it feels as though someone has yanked out your stomach. I had to hear the phrase form several times in my head before I said, everything I love goes away. Everything I love goes away. I thought about the camera we used this summer to shoot 9 hours of vacation from the canyonlands of way out West Texas to the Central Park playground in New York City, where the film, well, let's just say it took off in a new creative direction of unanticipated collaboration. Because the loss of that record of the last vacation, the only record I've ever had in these flights of fancy, was easier to process than 999 other losses recorded somewhere in my brain this year, ranging from 6 inches, 3 pounds of hair, to people I love, my mother, my boyfriend, the children moving back to their dads. I don't have much, never have. Perhaps that's why the few things seem so dear. An African politician once told me that deprivation produces tyrants. Things are easier. Earrings, diaries, llama finger puppets. Things don't disappoint until they leave. And when they do, like all things do, it's just easier to move on without them. It all comes away in the water, the rocks and the trees, mountains of things we've attached ourselves to. Neanderthal men, frozen Inuits with 300 words for snow, mammoth tusks and saber tooths left on the landscape for glaciers or museums to collect in the next millennium. Like children on the beach picking up sea glass and stones, crab shells and conches until they hand them to you discreetly to lose behind you so the next kid can have them. I guess that's how love works, too. A perpetual cycle of pickup, drop-off, pickup, drop-off, hastening to frenetic and warm weather until something different happens. Like yesterday, after I turned every blanket, scanned the floor, slid my hand around the tub, before pulling the stopper, after I slipped the other earring out of my earlobe and relinquished it to my jewelry box, a hot spot for singles these days, it happened. I sat on the bed, I put my right hand back on it, that tricky little aquamarine. I was ecstatic, ebullient, transported in a second, almost as happy as I was 2 days before when Jason the Argonaut, a fabled ex-boyfriend rumored to have died in Iraq, contacted me out of the ether. A message as simple as, hey, shithead, what are you up to? Is enough to stop the flood, to buck a trend, to change the climate, like cavemen forming carpools and Eskimos switching to incandescent light bulbs.
Well done. And Joel Sweeney's next.
Go, Joel!
Well, hello. This is two titles. So it's a bonus for you. Two titles for one piece. In other words, I can't make up my mind. Mr. Y and the X Factor. The title printed is View of a Nobody. It's an interview, a dialogue, if you like. So, Mr. Y, what do you think of author X? Not much. But Mr. Y, he's won awards, international awards. He's highly thought of. Is that so? Well, I prefer not to think of him at all. But he's published many books. The critics all agree he's great. Critics all agree? That is worrying. But they can't all be wrong, Mr. Y. The Guardian, the Sunday Times, all the literary journals, they all review his latest books and say he's the finest, he's king. King, eh? Well, there seems to be quite a body of opinion in his favour out there. He hardly needs any recommendation from me. Don't you think you might be missing something? Why are you bothering to come to me with this question? I am, after all, a stranger to the company you've mentioned. I am a nobody. Why should my opinion matter? Because we're doing a survey of the man in the street, Mr. Y, a general survey of the public, and you have accepted our fee and agreed to take part. I regret it already. It was just that I needed the money. How can you dismiss so many critics, such a body of learned opinion, all agree on how wonderful Mr. X and his book is? Well, you see, I don't read reviews or papers much. I don't know who any of these people are. I didn't realize they were great. But have you read many books, Mr. Y? No, I only read this one because you paid me. Ah, that explains it. It does? Yes, if you haven't read many books, you can hardly have a valid opinion. Ah, but I've tried to read many books. I've given them all a go, all the greats. But with a lot of them, I could never get beyond the first few pages. Mr. Y, what did you think of the opening pages of the book in question? Bunkum. Writer X strikes me as someone who's struggling with his weaker self, and his weaker self, unfortunately, is getting the better of the encounter. I found myself getting more and more confused as I read. I had to stop for health reasons. He should withdraw this book immediately before he does damage to innocent readers out there.
Very droll, Mr. Y, very droll.
Droll? No, you misunderstand me. I mean perfectly serious. Yes, yes, ha ha. Mr. Y, in a word, how would you assess author X and his latest work?
No one word could do such a man justice. I'll need several.
Self-obsessed? Self-engrossed, totally invalid, skewed, partial to himself, oblivious to the real world, completely escapist, irrelevant to my life, and I believe to anyone else's life, most and worst of all, excruciatingly boring. But Mr. Y, don't Mr. Y me, I know what bores me, and this book bores me. Do you know what writer X lacks? He lacks the X factor. My advice to Mr. X is to go away to some quiet place and meditate and try to find himself. My advice to the public is on no account to buy this book, and if they are bamboozled into buying it, then not to read it on any account. But you're a nobody, Mr. Y. You've said it yourself. Why should people listen to you? Why should we even record your opinions? You're a maverick, a crank. What do you know about the world of literature anyway? You've admitted you've hardly ever finished a book in your life. Indeed, and that's what's keeping me sane. And let me tell you something for the record. You say that I am a nobody, and you are almost right, sir. Almost, but not quite. You see, an ancestor of mine appeared in a fairy tale several centuries ago as a little boy. He only spoke one line, but he is known all over the world for this one line. People to this day recognize his words, his famous point of view, because he spoke the truth. Because he spoke it with courage. I like to think I have inherited these qualities. Think of all the characters in Shakespeare, for instance, and all the plays, and all the novels in all the world. All the lines they have spoken, yet so many are never remembered. Yet this little boy spoke one line in a fairy tale, and everyone remembers it. You say you're Mr. X with all his awards as a great writer, much acclaim, that he is in short king. Well, let me tell you, in my humble opinion, sir, the king has no clothes, and winter is not far off. Good day, sir. Thank you.
being John Mandel.
God damn it.
Eugene is next.
This is a poem selected by George Harvey. It's called Reply to Cardinal Napier. You asked me for my Easter war picture. It's a long way from the Drakensberg mountains outstations. Goody Ilan Clara, Shilpale, Nave Kiran. Mass passes. The east window fills with light. Light of Christ falling on a country pilgrim. Sinead.
I heard Eugene reading English, so as far as I'm actually understanding. Emily Davis.
I got it. Right, this is for my sister. It was going to be quite hard to read, to write this, because, you know, it's for my sister. And, I decided to write something this after I kind of realized that the thing about siblings is that they kind of see what you're too weak or afraid to see in your own life, and that's the purpose they serve. So that's how she, what she is for me. So this is called Vision Sister for Laura. 1. Rose petal skin intruder, stealer of gazes. I dig at your eye, opening to life, and open a well of tears. Full of fear, I watch what is mine poured into you. I see your other eye suck my light and scratch it like a tick. Pinned on Mama's knee, I helplessly kick. Our cries locked together. 2. Mom's stories always end with sorry. Sorry for the rest of her life. Sorry for what we can and can't remember. She forgets both your eyes healed and grew stronger than fists and blood. You stare down dark throats of road and trees and coyotes for help. And get blamed while I black out with upstairs TV. 3. Show me who kicked over the tree, and I show you Santa. You show me how Mom's teeth cracked, and I show you her smile. Show me glass in your foot the doctor missed. I show us pocketing sharp rocks as arrowheads down at the creek. Show me how Mom squeezed a dollar up her nose. I show you where the chocolate rolls are hid. Show me how shadows of blood stain. I show you spaghetti can hang like questions on the wall when cooked. You show me a sling for a broken collarbone. I show you the red and white menu at Chuck a Burger. Show me the dead eyes of a baby pig and headlights. I show you a cakewalk we couldn't lose. Show me one ungrateful bitch. I show you a pink-faced girl.
And Emily's reading at Gulp's Cafe. At night. And Mary O'Connell, she won't be reading there.
Yesterday was Bloom's Day, and this is my version of something that happened to Ulysses. It's called Siren Song. Odysseus speaks. Circe warned me of their fatal spell. I know the danger that is the talk of the Aegean ports. Know the power of those unearthly voices that float across the waves. A cord to pull upon the will, lasso the ardor of unwarying mariners, and tug them to their doom. I embrace the risk. Seek pleasure without pain, long to escape unscathed from indulged enchantment. I alone will taste the thrill of this forbidden song, an act of pure defiance to a pattern laid down. I've half forgotten Ithaca, my lady and my son. The flames of Ilium are but a memory. Making it happen will require some skill. Weary from wandering, the men resist. ravaged from pillaging and plunder, they long to seek out their familiar haunts. But I hold fast. They rage at me, remind me of the time I dragged them from the island where the lotus blooms, that they had begged me to remain. I stay deaf to their combined dissent, appalled at my imperious need to override their pleadings and concern. I set my wily will to hatch a plan. I have the wax prepared to stop their ears, the rope laid by to lash me to the mast. The Dog Star is our guide. As sails unfurl against a cloudless sky, I know when I'm invaded by those silver tongues. I'll flail and beg the crew to alter course. If I'm destroyed by my unchecked desires, at least my dirge will be worth dying for. Of all the dangers of this endless voyage, none fills me with such ecstasy as this. So often the plaything of the gods, tossed between Scylla and Charybdis, the forced lover of Calypso, enslaved by Polyphemus. For once, I am the agent of my fate.
Topic is gomaul, on shlir is allinga erendawan.
Rishrahanes na Heinicha exquila sirsha, a gloishacht gomirach, the deed tillin and tida. Kahina vein alm, an oid and a lean mochri, o ro who is in vodig, o ro who is in vodig. She had in vain of Yohani, the rink in a golki bui, then in bogashin on lawn, a lord in Chanavir, muir in a golki. She in huig, the cash lawn and woodig. The Mahui le gaffa inish, er mean ro oars don kera tour. Is cousin for no adurha e, bean, shave, canasta, kaum is costa. E cousin kuin biag bidach, mahinshir. Kahin a vein aum, an oit in a lian mukhri, o ro kuas an vadig, o ro kuas an vadig. Ta bail an agian as moraya. Ach fos im chlwys, im chlwys y gwrs, im chlwys y gwrs.
Christy Parker. Father's or anything like that.
I was kind of interested there to hear Monica say that she was at the Young Man Festival last week, and you were the first poet to read it. You were the second, Monica. It's been 5 years that she's there, but they never asked me that. Fine, it was Coma. It's effectively about a journey as well. Admittedly, it's only a journey of 50 hours to go up the pole, but it's a journey nonetheless, you know. And of course, the Coma poem is a true story. And it's titled, oh, holy God. I'm not a man who is normally squeamish, but when I'm in a pub while sitting my beamish, I saw standing beside me the strangest of guys with a very long stare and tattoos on his eyes. A scar on his head spread his hair down the middle, and the stubs on his tongue seemed to hurt him a little. It looked like a rat had been chewing his ear, and the fleas in his beard were not shy to appear. Black holes marked his teeth, and I feared for the worst, as the boils on his neck looked ready to burst. His arms were encircled with coils of barbed wire, and to judge by his trousers, he had been in a fire. 10 watts caught the light as they glowed on his chin, and his knuckles, I noticed, were stripped of their skin. His breath sank of cigarettes, whiskey, and stout. So I said, and 3 busy blue bottles encircled his snout. I soon caught his eye and said, pardon my staring. Would it be right in assuming you drive for bus errand? You had the same experience with me. He looked quite appalled and exclaimed, oh God, no. In fact, I'm quite helpful. My name's Father Joe. I know that vacations weren't going too well, but surely I thought they're not recruiting from hell. Rome was in trouble if it now came to pass that this man beside me could say a Sunday Mass. He said, I know you're in shock, for my collar is missing. But I'm a gospel in the flesh if you hang on and listen. The tattoos on my lids are the shape of the cross, so my eyes are not far from God, who's my boss. The scar on my head came when being baptized. The priest went on the font and the whole thing capsized. But the studs on my tongue are like lies that are followed, but lies won't cause harm unless they are swallowed. The large section missing from the top of my ear says we cannot believe half what we hear. And the 12 lively fleas that play by my chin are the dozen apostles jumping out of their skin. Man will decay like my black teeth, but then, happily, my boils will all rise again. The barbed wire on my arms keep my flock safe and well, and the burns on my trousers remind us of hell. The commandments are seen through the warts of my jaw, and fighting the devil as my knuckles turned raw. The tree stinks of my breath, of the tree men so wise, and the Trinity is there in those friendly blue flags. I bought him a pint and quickly confessed that his living his fate had me very impressed. Or was the church not upset? Had it not realized that he didn't wear black to be recognized? Oh, the church doesn't mind, he said with a wink, about how I do or what I do or how much I drink. I'm free to be me and to save souls this way, as long as the Pope doesn't.
Thank you. Thank you. And last on the list, the man who's been responsible for keeping the sound less jarring all evening.
Oh yeah.
Rab.
Thank you.
this one for Stephen. The MC did that. The wind blows in with thoughts of you. I sit with my pen and my paper too, writing down words that hang in the air, intelligent, thoughtful, something else. Oh, I can't remember. I've nearly got it. Intelligent, gentle, trusting, and fair. We are on a journey, walking along similar byways. Every now and then, our paths cross, and we spend some time together. You are young and you are old, strong in your body, wise in your soul. You are like a mirror to me, or the agony and the ecstasy. Can you hear all the people singing, joining in like a big old choir? Can you hear all the people calling? This is the day. This is the hour. Hey, Stephen, it's your birthday. Shout out loud. Hey, shout out loud. Hey, Stephen, you're a good friend. Challenging, provocative, thoughtful, sensitive, and proud.